today's episode of Next Step, we'll be talking about, well, the 7-4-3-1 formula for love, also Thanksgiving and prayer, how to make it relevant in our lives. This is Father Voska, and I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, emotional, physical, and everything in between. This is episode number 546 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, happy Thanksgiving if you're here in America. If you're not, well, happy Thanksgiving anyway. It's a great time to be thankful. Today, how about the three types of love? You probably heard about them, probably even read about them. Three types of love. How about seven types of love? You ready for that? How about if I just reflect on it? That's coming up in the second portion of today's show. I was officiating at a beautiful wedding last Saturday night and had a chance to reflect because it was a wedding of a personal nature. A dear friend of ours, her daughter got married, and we had a chance to reflect on a life that we watched grow up right in front of us, and what is love all about. So that's coming up in the second portion of today's show. I do want to start off with Thanksgiving. It's a beautiful time of year. The fall here in the... I always have to qualify where we're at, because I know we have this worldwide audience, and we've got people down in South America and in Australia, people who do not share the autumn with us the way we see leaves falling and everything. Right now, it's our autumn. I would imagine it's your spring down there. Anyway, we celebrate this beautiful feast called Thanksgiving. It's a time to pause. It's a time to reflect. And there's certain traditions. There's people come, they go to their grandma's house, and they watch football games. They have a chance to be with family. But, there is also a tradition in the last 20 years, at least in the 20 years, is the Armenia Telethon. And this year, they're claiming it the new Armenia because, well, there's so much has changed in Armenia, and they're trying to, you know, really accent that the newness is what we're trying to support. It was interesting because this morning we turned it on just before I came before the microphone, and usually what's usual fare is, back in the old times, we used to be invited as clergy to share the opening prayer, and then slowly they got rid of all of the clergy, and they brought together the leaders of each of the so-called denominations. They would bring the bishop from the Etchmiadzin, well, basically of the Armenian Church, right? But they would call it the Etchmiadzin Diocese. Then they would bring somebody from the prelacy, and then they'd bring somebody from the Catholic Church, and they'd bring a Protestant, and they'd line them up. And this is up until last year. Now, this year, it started, and I haven't even seen it. I'm bringing it up because I guess we're just getting farther and farther and farther away from the sacred and going towards secularization, because the church basically isn't as relevant as it used to be. Perhaps, arguably, people could say it's not even relevant, you know. So it was always interesting for me to watch that beginning as the leaders did it, because, you know, we start off with the sign of the cross, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then their Protestant brothers do not make the sign of the cross. So it was always interesting just to watch how they got around that. Forgive me for checking this out. But I don't know what, he would put his hand over his heart And it was always kind of interesting to me, like, is that in lieu of making the sign of the cross? Is it, or is it a pledge that we're pledging our allegiance to the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit? I don't know. But I noticed that it was noticeably absent from the beginning today of the telethon. Now, that was about an hour or so ago. I don't know if it's come on, if they've added it to that. But definitely there is this telethon. We at the In His Shoes Ministry have earmarked our funds this year for Thanksgiving to go to the fire victims here in California. It is just an overwhelming situation what we have here in California, especially in Northern California. This morning, I think the figures were under 100 that are dead up in Northern California, but close to 1,000 people are still missing. 900 and something are still missing. And most presumably they are dead. And this is in a fire that took over a place called Paradise, of all names, you know. So we have earmarked donations to go to the fire victims. And you could find that on our website on In His Shoes. We also take this opportunity to pause. You know, I've been talking about this for the last couple weeks, about making those prayers real. When we say to somebody, you know, somebody who's had this massive devastation, loss of family, loss of property and everything, you say, you're in my prayers. We talked about it last week. We shared with you last week. We did our Bible study. This is so important that our prayers have meaning. You know, it's not just something you throw out like the newscaster does. You know, the newscaster says, they report on this devastation and they go, you're in our thoughts and our prayers. And meanwhile, in the World Series, like, no, come on, folks. You know, that's insulting. It's insulting to somebody to say, you're in my prayers, and then in the next breath, go on with your life. At least have a little bit of compassion for the person. And that's where the sincerity of prayer is, right? It's the reflection of that compassion. I mean, this is probably, you know what? It's all part of the same equation. You watch the Armenian telethon and they're saying, well, why do we need you to stand up there and do the prayer? Obviously, it's lacking that compassion. It's just a ritual. It's become a formula. So we start it off and here's our leaders saying a prayer. But you're not engaged in that prayer. You see, it's a interesting phenomena that I just noticed this morning. That basically we've forgotten. We don't need it. We don't want to. Ultimately, it's invoking God's blessings on it, but we don't want that. We don't want it because it's lacking that compassion. And it's just as the newscaster who looks out and he says that, you know, 20 dead in today's fire. And now in the World Series, we see that, you know, the Dodgers lost. And, you know, it's like, come on, folks. It's like, where's the connection of our prayer life and our spirituality? And you know what? We're talking on these examples, but don't look too far. That's what's happening within our lives. Our children see that disconnect too. Our children see that, okay, you go to the church and you're praying there. And for what? Where's the connection to daily life? And that is a very, very legitimate question. And young people ask it. We all have to ask that. I mean, there's a disconnect between your prayer life, your church life, what happens in church, and the reality of life outside. Where is that connection? I mean, what's the eternal question in all churches? Where is the youth? I mean, you go into any church. This is because I'm in the field, right? You go into Christian bookstores, you go online for Christian education. Everything is about how do we get young people into church. Have you ever thought about it? What do you have to offer the young people? Young people are already pure, are already innocent. Shouldn't the church be a place where you detox and find that innocence again? Will you find that connection with God? Has it ever occurred to you that maybe young people have that connection? Maybe that's why Jesus said, let them come to me, for to such belong the kingdom of heaven. It always amazes me. We go into Sunday schools and we see these young kids learning. I saw it just a couple of months ago. It was kind of ridiculous to me. You know what we teach them? Don't chew gum. Don't cross your legs. Don't talk. It's a whole list of don'ts, you know. Occasionally, there might be a do in there, right? I don't know. don't know, something's off. It's our disconnect. Look what happened in Toronto with the Armenian church there. All of a sudden, its close neighbor, the AGBU, supposedly, this is something I've never bought, and if you've listened to me, you know I never bought it, but supposedly that the AGBU really cares about this is the Armenian General Benevolent Union, that they care about what happens to the Armenian church. And they basically sold out their share of the community center over there, their hall, and now the church is kind of like left. Unfortunately, it was written in their bylaws that they had the first right of refusal, so now there's some issues and things like that going on. And all the details you can read, I'll put a link on today's show notes. You could check out what they're saying, the statements, and so on. But again, it just shows a lack of – it shows really a disconnect between reality and what the church has to offer. And that's what we try to do here on The Next Step. That's really what our mission is. That's what our mission has always been, is to make it relevant. What do you think walking in the shoes of others is all about, right? Walking in his shoes is the ultimate relevancy. But we can't seem to get people to buy into it, right? Because it's so much easier to make the sign of the cross and to look regal and royal. And we really, really do a good job of that, don't we? Anyway, it happens to be Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a time for us to stop and really thank God for the blessings that we have. Now, did you know that every Sunday in the church, when we celebrate the Divine Liturgy, the Holy Eucharist, that is a Thanksgiving service? And there is a nice video that was prepared a few years ago. Let me make a note here that we'll put it on today's show notes. Do check it out. It's a short video that was produced by the diocese where I explain the connection between a regular Thanksgiving service and the Divine Liturgy that we celebrate on Sundays. Now, you say, okay, it's kind of funny. You look at it. What do you mean Thanksgiving? That's what I'm talking about relevance. If you're going into a divine liturgy on Sunday, where is it where you could just look and be, you know, enchanted by all this beautiful music? Sometimes not that good, or you could listen to the melodies, and it's good for once, twice, maybe three times. And where is it that you make the connection with your life to say thanks to God for the beauty that you have? And, you know, you take the number of hours in a week. It's 168 hours in a week. You're basically talking about 1 hour of that 168 that you need to take out and section off and make it into a Thanksgiving ritual. Yeah, I'm using that word, ritual. We need rituals in our lives. Otherwise, you've got chaos. What's the entire sense of bringing order to chaos? It's to give it that ritual, right? Otherwise, you've got just time out there. But what do? We put a face on it, and we say, okay, there's 24 hours. We put a face on it, and we say there's 60 minutes inside of each of those hours. Put a face on it, and we have a way of measuring it and looking at incremental time periods. So we go home at this time. We go to work at this time. And that's the order. That's the ritual. And so, too, in our lives when we go to church, it's the ritual. There's nothing wrong with that. It's actually bringing order. It's what science does all the time, right? Brings order to the chaos. It defines that order, I should say, not the brings. We do that. Religion does that. We bring order to the chaos, or we should be doing that. Let me say it that way. Science is what will look at it and explain it as such. It's beautiful. They work together, don't they? There is a new television series. It's called God Friended Me. I'm getting into it. It's really kind of, it's a nice concept. And the guy who's the star of the show, he runs a podcast. It's a podcast that tries to reconcile our notions of spirituality in this secularized world, in a world that's defined by science. It's a pretty good show, and I don't know if it's available. I'm sure it's available on the internet. I've been watching it on regular antenna, and it comes in every Sunday evening. And actually, I kind of just, you know, my one of my rituals, my Sunday rituals, besides from the Divine Liturgy, is to watch 60 Minutes. It's one of the news magazines that I really appreciate. You know, it does something, you know. There's like these huge, horrible, horrible events taking place, and then 60 Minutes shows up, and it basically has that power, has that leverage to get people to pay attention and fix up things. So I enjoy watching that, and this show, God Friended Me, comes on right afterwards. And basically the premise is that this guy who is questioning the existence of God, his father is a pastor, he's questioning the existence of God, he is friended by an account that says it is God. And this God account has sent him suggestions for friends. And it seems like each of these friends are in need of this guy's help. It's a nice premise. I'm not going to give too much. If you're interested, I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. But it brings relevance. And that search and that quest for relevance is what it's all about. That's why Thanksgiving, if you think about it, here in the States, that's why Thanksgiving is the celebration that it is. It's not like we're a very spiritual country, but we like it. We like to stop. We like the idea of Thanksgiving. Even if you don't go to church, even if you don't believe, you know that there is something. And in Thanksgiving, when you offer a Thanksgiving, when you say Thanksgiving, what are you saying? You're saying that there is something greater than yourself for which you need to say thank you. Unless, of course, you're Snoop Dogg. Did you hear that? When the other day he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and he goes, thank me, thank me, thank me, thank you. Yeah, yeah, there are people like that, and, you know, God bless them, and whatever makes you tick. I'm not here to criticize them, though you could read that as ridiculous from me, but anyway, I'm not here to criticize anybody, whatever makes you tick. But here, listen to this, you know, when you understand that there's something greater than yourself, then you can look up at the stars. Then you understand what it means, mystery. Not in a baffling sense. Not like, oh, there's mystery and I can't understand it and I can't comprehend it. But to understand mystery, and you're part of that. The ticking in your heart cavity. The brain cells that are constantly in wonder and looking up at the universe and realizing you're a part of that. That's a mystery. That's the beautiful mystery. You know, today not only happens to be Thanksgiving, there's some anniversaries today. And that anniversary, those celebration of those anniversaries are also part of that order. For instance, today is exactly 55 years to the date that President Kennedy was shot. In fact, right about now, I remember getting the news that Kennedy, the president, the young president, was shot. We did a show on this a few years ago when it was the 50th anniversary. It's a very, it's one of those events that if you were alive at the time, you know exactly where you were. It changed life. 55 years ago to the date. Actually, it was 50 years to the date that something very unique happened. The Beatles. Yeah, the rock band, Beatles. Put out their white album. Actually, it was called The Beatles, but it became familiar as The White Album because it was just basically white. And it astonished us. It was a double album. It had four sides. Four sides. Can you imagine that? Came out on November 22nd. It didn't hit the United States till the 25th. And I remember exactly where I was, 12 years old, and getting that. And just amazed, amazed. It's something new, innovative. And just this month, they came out with a 50th anniversary edition of it and releasing some tapes, which many people knew existed but had never heard, called the Escher tapes. Basically, the Beatles, the takes in preparation for the actual tapes. It's fascinating. I've been listening to them for the last several days. They've been just released. And very, very interesting. It's part of that mystery. It's part of that mystery because you realize that you are a being in time. And you have parameters. You have definition. Okay? You're not just free flux. You have definition. You are defined by the parameters around you. These are not regulatory, but give you meaning and definition. It's very cosmic when you think about it. I hope you're thinking about it. Yeah, 50 years to the date, the Beatles album. And I would love to play some of that for you, and I will on some other occasion. Today I'm going to share with you a song which our dear friend Gor Mkhitaryan sent me. Just a couple months ago, actually, he sent it to me. I haven't had a chance to really get it out. We spoke the other day, had a chance to talk a little bit about the song. It's called Motherless. He wrote this for SOAR, the Charlotte Branch, S-O-A-R. We'll put a link on today's show notes to the organization itself. It's an acronym which stands for the Society for Orphaned Armenian Relief. And he wrote this for them. It's called Homeless. Beautiful words, beautiful melody, and sung like only Gor Mkhitaryan can. Enjoy.
Կատ ֆածարի մանկություն ես սպասում եմ մի երաշքի կոշիկ խնձոր թե խալիկ կամ լուսավոր ապագային լուսադիտի հավատարին դու իմ ընկեր իգնային քեզ եմ պատմում հեքիաթներս արինալի ու արցունքով Մայրիկ եր մեկիս չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախտներ եմ կծացկելու մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել Մայրիկ եր մեկիս չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախտներ եմ կծացկելու մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել տեսյունի լուր նայում եմ հորիզոնին էլ չեմ փնտրում ես հետքերը անհայտացած ծնողներից արևի տակ միշտ քայլեցի չջերմացած պատկերացրեցի ուրվագիծը քո դեմքի ու կարոտը ձեռքերի Երբեգես չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախներն եմ կծացկելու Մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել Մայրիկ երբեգես չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախներն եմ կծացկելու Մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել Երազներին հավատացի Զոր գիշեր ամեն տարի Ցուրտ անձրերի Կատիները հատի-գատի ես Հանվեցի չէիր հուսադրել երբ պետ դու ինձ Չէիր խոստացել, որ հետ կգաս Կհանդիպենք մենք երբեր է Թե ոչ այստեղ գոնե այնտեղ Մայրիկ երբեք ես չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախտներ եմ կծացկելու մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել Մայրիկ երբեք ես չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախտներ եմ կծացկելու մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել Մայրիկ երբեք ես չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախտներ եմ կծացկելու մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել Մայրիկ երբեք ես չեմ ունեցել Այդ բախտներ եմ կծացկելու մեջ կով ինչ շրջվել
The unmistakable sound of Gor Mkhitaryan doing Motherless, his latest creation, produced for the SOAR of Charlotte, North Carolina. SOAR standing for the Society for Orphaned Armenian Relief. And it's an honor and pleasure to be playing that here on our podcast. A dear, dear friend of ours, Gor Mkhitaryan, for the last over 10 years, right? I think we actually have a common date that we met. We met on a couple of occasions, but actually got together to do our first project was on 777, July 7th, 2007. So just do the math, and we're about 11 years of friendship. And wonderful, wonderful experiences through those 11 years, including this last one. He called me a few days ago and shared with me some thoughts about this and some of his new projects. We wish him the best, and I hope you enjoyed this this song. We'll have a link to not only this song, but all of Gor's great music. Also, a link to the Society for Orphaned Armenian Relief. I have heard about them and actually had my first occasion to open up their website because of this song. And it's quite impressive, the amount of work that they do and the things that they do over there. Please, please do check it out. Gor Mkhitaryan performing Motherless. Are you ready for some love talk? Well, I always have. I always like talking about this subject, about love. Isn't that what we're all about? Isn't that what God's all about? Isn't that what God is? Right? Love. So let's talk a little bit about it. And I want to talk about love as we experience it, specifically in the context of marriage, because the other day I had the unique opportunity and privilege to officiate at a wedding service that was very close to us. A dear friend of ours, her daughter was getting married. We watched this daughter grow mature into a young lady throughout the years, known them for over 20 years, 25 years. And it was very emotional to be standing there watching her come down the aisle and taking her vow with her husband. And I'm the one who has to administer that vow. And you know, one of the things that I love about the Armenian church service is the final act within the sacrament, and that's the tasting of the wine. And it was interesting, before the service, I asked the priest, the parish priest there, I said, "What kind of wine do you use?" And I won't even mention the brand, because I refused to mention the brand. I was disappointed. It was a very sweet wine. Suffice it to say, it was a sweet wine. And I understand for the sacrament, for Holy Communion, there is a preference to do it with sweet wine, although it's not necessary. It just needs to be wine, right? But for the sacrament of holy matrimony, I always like to use a bittersweet wine, whether it's a Merlot or some type of a red wine that isn't completely sweet. And the reason for that is because you'd be lying to the couple to say that here's a cup of sweet wine and may every day of your life be filled with sweet wine. Obviously, if you're a couple, obviously, if you're living, forget about in marriage, just in friendship. Forget about in friendship, just in families. It's impossible to always have sweet wine. It's impossible to always have a sweet day. There are days where there are difficulties, where you are confounded, where there are frustrations. And those frustrations are basically the bitter moments of life. The bitter wine, the wine glass is filled with bitter wine. And I always like to share with the couple this idea that the cup that I gave you today is not filled with sweet wine. It's a reminder that life is bittersweet. There are going to be sweet moments and there will be bitter moments. And it's really up to you how you interpret that, how you take it in, and how you change that bitter wine into sweet wine. And the secret to doing that comes to us from the Gospel of John, chapter 2. In fact, the evangelist says this is Jesus' first miracle that he performs in Cana of Galilee. And if just enough that I said those two words, Cana of Galilee, you should know what I'm talking about. Jesus is invited to this wedding feast, and they run out of wine. So, you know, it's all of a sudden upon him because his mother is telling him, hey, they've run out of wine over here. And Jesus says, so what? What's it to me or you? But he does do this miracle. He has the attendants draw water into these giant jars. What does it say? It says each of them holding 20 or 30 gallons. He says, fill these with water. And they fill them with water. And then he says, now draw some out. He tells the steward of the feast, sort of like the master of ceremonies for the feast. He says, go ahead and draw some water out. And when the steward takes out the water, he realizes that it's no longer water, but it is wine. Now listen to what he says over here. He turns to the bridegroom, because after all, it's the couple's wedding. And he says, every man serves the good wine first. And when men have drunk freely, then pour wine. But you have kept the good wine until now. So first of all, there's a little economic secret, right? If you're gonna serve wine, make sure you serve the good wine first, so people get drunk, and then you can do the cheap wine. That's basically the secret. But even more important, right there is in the story, is that Jesus's wine was truly the good wine, was the sweet wine, was the better wine, and they had kept it till the end. He thought he didn't get the idea that it was a miracle that it happened in front of him. And so too for couples, you know, as couples in any marriage, you have difficulties, and there are bitter days. There are difficulties that you go through. And the true trick is to be able to transform that bitter wine into sweet wine. And the only way you can do that is through Jesus Christ. It's by inviting Christ into that life and having Christ change that water, that bitterness, into sweet wine. And I think to me that's one of the most beautiful parts and aspects of our marriage service, that gives credibility to the entire idea of marriage. Because otherwise you could just dismiss it, that, okay, two people, you're not going to get along, there's going to be difficulties. But there is a possibility, and that's where hope comes in. Throughout the wedding service, we talk about hope. Well, what is that hope? That hope is for betterness, for goodness, that in this union that there can be something better. So in preparation for this wedding, I got together some notes and I started reading. Actually, I got up early that day to do some reading from the church fathers. And I have to be honest with you, I was really disappointed in the church fathers' rendition of what they talked about. Not disappointed, of course, in what they had to say, but disappointed that I couldn't make that connection. I couldn't bring that relevancy card to play. You know, it's interesting, in the Armenian language, there is a word called amusin. And amusin is sometimes referred to as the husband. Actually, that's not a true translation of the word. Amusin is really a spouse, because a woman can be an amusin as well as a man can be an amusin. It is a spouse. And I like this non-gender specific term, because it really plays more into that whole equality issue, which is really such a big deal these days, and as it should be. Amusin. Well, it doesn't end there. There's some more to it too. And this is where I had a chance to really contemplate, because, you know, one of the things that the Greeks have done is over-philosophized. By nature of being Greek, right, you have the big philosophers of the time, you know, and you have the opportunity to philosophize about love. I mean, you've probably heard about the three types of love. The Greeks had a field day with this. You know, the main people at the philosophy, right, they said there's three types of love. There's eros, filial, and agape. Eros, erotic love, one that everybody understands. It's the physical love. It's what Madison Avenue sells everything from perfume to sports cars on, you know, that there's this physical attraction that people have, and you could accent that physical attraction. There is filial love, which is basically the love that friends enjoy that you have with friends. There's many friends that I love. It's about the companionship that you have to be able to share in ideas. And there is, of course, agape love, which the Greeks have, you know, characterized as this God love. In other words, undeserving. We do not deserve God's love, but we get it. God gives us his love. And basically a lot of New Testament and Western Christianity has picked up on these, and they have expounded on this. And every time I've talked about the three loves, I'm always quickly reminded by our producer over here, Susie, as she's signaling to me right now, like, do not forget the fourth type, which is, I believe it's C.S. Lewis who has added the fourth type of love, which is love of objects, a love of things. Yeah, you have a love of things that you have in your life too. Okay, and then that's another dimension, probably accented even more tomorrow, which is Black Friday, when you can have a love of things. Now, how about seven types of love? Well, that morning as I was looking through and really going through my notes, I discovered that on Psychology Today, of all places, there is an author there, Neil Burton, a doctor who has identified seven types of love. He's got Eros, he's got Philia, and he's got Agape. But on top of that, he's also got four others. He talks about Storge, a familial love. It's a kind of filial love pertaining between parents and their children. So maybe different from a friend love. He's got agape love. He's got ludus. Ludus is playful or uncommitted love. It can involve activities such as teasing and dancing or more overt flirting. He's also got pragma. Pragma is a kind of practical love, founded on reason or duty, one's long-term interest. Sexual attraction takes a back seat in favor of personal qualities and compatibilities, shared goals, and making it work, he writes. And then the seventh type of love, which he calls philatia, is a self-love, which can be healthy or unhealthy. It has to do with the ego and so on. So he's now defined it into seven terms. And as I'm reading through this, I thought to myself, well, think about in the Armenian, what is the word for love? It is ser. Ser. We don't separate it. There is just one word, ser. Now, what's interesting about it, if you write it, and especially if when you write it in the old classical notation, not talking about the new notation because they did away with this. Probably has something to do with what I talked about earlier about the relevance. But in the classical, it is written with the letter, the seventh letter of the alphabet, the E, which is the God letter, the verb to be. And it is right in the middle of the word ser. And if you think about it, it is one word which describes everything that I've talked about. It describes the three, and it describes the seven, it describes the four. Now what I want to do is I want to share with you the symbolism that we use within the church service. Because if you've attended an Armenian church service, unique to that service is the crowning. And the crowning, I know now they have these kind of like imperial margarine crowns, but the true crown is the braid. The braid is made of three colors of string fastened together with a cross, the cross of sacrifice. And the three braids' colors are white for purity, red for sacrifice, and green for life. I'm going to repeat this because it's important you put this in your mind right now, because we're going to play around with these words. There's a three. There's a trinity of braids here, okay? White, purity. Red, sacrifice. Green, life. And these three elements are necessary for the kingdom to flourish. A new king and queen are crowned during the wedding service. And as the king and queen, you are together to what? To be pure with one another, to sacrifice for one another in your kingdom and to have life, to perpetuate it, to make sure that it continues. White, red, green, the colors of the kingdom. Okay? Now, based on this idea that there's a trinity of colors, there's also the Greeks give us a trinity of loves. Okay, let's put them into play. Listen to this, because it works so beautifully. The white is purity, right? Can we ascribe that to agape, the God love, unconditional love? How about red, sacrifice? Can we ascribe that to filial love, the love that we have as friends, one for another? And how about green? Isn't that erotic love? The bodily love that gives perpetuation to the species, that makes it possible for life to continue. Are you with me so far? White, red, green. Agape, filial, eros. Now, I told you, in the Armenian language, we have one word for it. So if there's one word, if A equals B, B equals C, they are all interchangeable, aren't they? Let's interchange them. White. We said it was agape. How about eros? White. Isn't that purity, about that purity of being able to celebrate a new life, actually life form? How about red? Isn't that sacrificial love, also agape love? How about green, filial love? That life that we experience with friends, with friendship. To have that fullness of life with the experiences we have with one another. Okay, let's push it one more time. Ready? White, red, green. We said white agape. We said white eros. Put it in as filial. Isn't that the purity of friendship? To be honest with one another. Red, eros. We talk about sacrificial. Isn't that love act, one of sacrifice? That physical attraction that we have, one of sacrifice. And finally, green, life. Isn't that agape love? You see, it all works together. It all works out. And I think when we over-intellectualize the entire idea of love, we lose something. We have compartmentalized something which should really be more of mystery. And this is what I was saying earlier. Yes, we define ourselves. We bring chaos and we bring it into order. But this is not a restrictive concept. It's our ability to look up and realize that we are part of something greater. That we belong to something greater. That when we talk about life, it is greater than the terms by which we define it and express it. It's not about three types of love, four types of love, seven types of love. It's about love and understanding that you're part of it. Is it any wonder that the middle letter of sed is the E? It's the God letter. God is love, says the evangelist. And it's that easy. And it is that pure. I just wanted to share with you a reflection that I had early one morning as I prepared for a very dear friend of ours, her wedding. And we wish her the best as she starts her new life off with her life partner, with her husband. And together we look forward to seeing the beauty that comes out of this union. Hey, I'm going to take a break right now. It is Thanksgiving. I'm sure you're ready to go off and do your things. I'll be back in a few moments to tell you where we're at these days and wrap it up.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace Jesus to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit InHisShoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and happy Thanksgiving to you, to Ken, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I'm very thankful for your support of this podcast, and you're in our prayers. Trust me, you're in all of our prayers, especially when I go and celebrate the Divine Liturgy. I take Apostle Ministry, I take Inner Shoes with me, and I remember all of you in my prayers. Very thankful for the friendship, for the trust that you put into this ministry. Really quickly, some upcoming dates. This Saturday, I'm going to be at the St. Mary Syrian Jacobite Church in Whittier, California. If you happen to be around there, I'm going to be doing the morning session of their retreat for the Syrian Orthodox youth. And the topic is about coming home, reflecting on the parable of the prodigal son, one of my favorites, if not the absolute most favorite. I think I've shared that with you in the past, that if everything else was lost in Christianity, all the writings and everything, except for this one parable, it would be enough to teach us what Christ wanted us to know about God, about the person of God, about the loving, the caring, and the forgiving quality of God. So that's coming up this Saturday morning. And let me see, I guess that's the 24th. On December 4th, there's going to be an ecumenical gathering at the St. Leon Surpots-Reventians in Burbank, California. And this is an annual event. I'll be emceeing that one. If you're around in Burbank, it's a Tuesday evening. Please do join us. All kinds of other things taken off. Our biggest project right now, of course, is our annual toy drive. We help the children of domestic violence. These are children that otherwise get unnoticed or not. People aren't concerned about. We've got a project going on about Sasna Shen. I've shared with you in the past. We'll take some more time in future podcasts to talk more about Sasna Shen. All of these are, you can find more information about these on our website inhisshoes.org or else on our Facebook page In His Shoes. And the toy drive is really interesting because for the last several years we've added the Amazon component to it, so you can participate from wherever you're at. Pick out a new toy. You can go to the link that we provide and it'll just show you. It'll show you all the different toys that you can order. And these toys get sent to us for distribution. I want to thank you for joining us today. It is a blessed day today. It is called Thanksgiving here in America. And no matter where you are in the world, take a moment to just stop and reflect on all you have to be thankful for. Thank God for the blessings that you have. Meanwhile, we'll thank God for all the blessings that you bring to this ministry. Take a moment right now to do a big shout out to our wonderful girl in Armenia, Mariam, as she gives birth to her second child today on Thanksgiving. So much to be thankful for. Listen, on behalf of the wonderful crew who brought today's show to you, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vazquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.